Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. It's the 27th of April, believe it or not, the last Monday in April, and which was one of my favorite Walter Matthau films.
Wasn't that great? Last Monday in April.
Yeah. So good.
Paul Apprentice. Yeah, it was a fine flick.
Paul Apprentice?
Yeah.
Very well done. Yeah. Nice reference, right? Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we can get on to talk about topics. We've got a lot to talk about, and a lot of different things happened over the weekend. And I can't promise that I won't just like start screaming out topics because there's
Bruce Jenner.
Right, we got to talk about Bruce Jenner. We have to talk. There's so many different things we have to talk about.
Yes.
Okay.
Earthquake.
Right.
I would say earthquake.
Is this a game show now? What's going on? I'll be good. I believe earthquake comes before.
I know, that's why I felt bad. Before Bruce Jenner.
I didn't even make that. That's what I mean, because that didn't even make the list, and yet it's still something I want to briefly mention.
I'd keep it off.
I'm with Alan for a change.
All right, let's go. First of all,
16 million people watched.
Introduce 17. WAMC's Alan Charnock is here. WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Good morning, sir.
Hi, boys and girls.
How are you? We should note Libby, who would normally be with us, is stuck in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
No, well. No,
I mean, you can usually get your way back.
No, I think the reason she was there was taking longer.
I see. Yeah, so it wasn't like she was, I'm lost. And
I couldn't possibly find my way back to the state of New York. Turned right at New Hampshire,
and then I don't know where I am now.
No. Okay. And investigative reporter and SUNY Albany journalism professor Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning. Good morning. Very nice to have you all here. Again, you can join us roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And let us start off with the issues of the day. And we begin, as Rosemary said, one of the two stories, but of course, the tragedy that happened in Kathmandu, the horrible earthquake that happened in Nepal. A growing sense of despair spread through Kathmandu on Sunday as the devastated Nepali capital was convulsed by aftershocks that sent residents screaming into the streets. By the way, aftershocks that were registering 7.2, 7.3 on the Richter.
Quakes, I mean, in themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is huge. I mean, really huge.
Convulsed a day after an earthquake killed more than 2,400 people, injured about 5,900. Residents grew frantic and the government entirely overwhelmed by the enormousness of the challenge facing the country, struggled to provide relief or much hope. And obviously, there is, those numbers are temporary. There's a lot more.
It's already gone way over 3,000.
Yeah, it's going to go higher.
And there are some that say it goes, maybe even tens of thousands, which we never know, of course.
They haven't gotten outside of the capital into smaller rural areas.
That almost always happens with these tragedies,
Right, and the roads of the city are completely impassable.
18 dead on Mount Everest from an avalanche set off by it, too. This was an enormous geological event.
So I know this is probably a media project question, and sorry for doing this, but I have to say that as I was watching the coverage over the weekend, this horrible thing happens where thousands of people are dead, and yet the story is about the Google executive.
About that, well, I'm sorry.
The Google executive. There was a Google executive who was their security was the headline because he was on Mount Everest.
Spot on.
And
is
was
he
killed.
Dead?
Yes.
He's getting dead.
Yes.
Three Americans are dead on Mount Everest, as far as I know. And you're right, Joe. The coverage, including on our website this morning, rescue operation on Mount Everest, that would seem to be a much lesser story than all the thousands who are died and all the relics that are gone and everything else.
But, as every plane crash, we know from every plane crash.
Right.
The first thing people want to know is, were there Americans on the plane?
And that's okay, I think.
Well, it's okay. But considering the event and how many dead people there are and families and everything else, it really does tell us that we're sort of still thinking about our stuff.
Well, basic news value, one of the basic news drivers is proximity. And if there were Americans there, that is the top news. I would, as an editor, I would have put that there. I didn't know about this.
No, but why would you have put it there?
Because you relate. Otherwise, it's this little faraway place filled with little people we're never going to ever meet, except, oh, yeah, wait, here's an American right
among them. Right. If you have somebody from Sheffield, Massachusetts, right. then, okay, I understand the local coverage doing that. I understand that. But if you are a national or international news operation and there are potentially thousands of people dead focusing on this. And by the way, tragic.
Well, I don't think they did not cover that. They included that too. But let me point out the New York Times, who had a former correspondent, Donatella Lorch. She's an amazing foreign correspondent who's now working freelance. Her husband's job brought them. She's been living in Kathmandu for a year. She was driving down a road with her 10-year-old son when it hit. And the car's swerving and things are falling. And she thought at first she had a flat tire. She did not realize what it was. Well, she wrote for the Times yesterday. It was amazing about how people have been worried about this for a long time. Everyone knew it was coming. And there's nothing really to be done. There is no government. This is one of the poorest governments on earth. They cannot really do much. It's not as if it happened in the United States where there would be enormous resources. And so people are helping one another and they're digging out and there's this great sort of optimism and help for each other. So it's a very hopeful article, and it made me feel closer to that quake because it was an American writing about it.
Interesting. I'm interested in your answer, Rosemary, about you as an editor would have, certainly played up the American connection. But I suspect part of your rationale, although I can never get inside your mind, as you know, but I think I suspect
sort of advanced intelligence training.
But part of your rationale is this is what our readers want to know. Yeah. That's what editors do. They do it because that's the first question people will ask.
Yes,
it is.
Well, and I also think this, and I can't come up with the name of the actress, but I think also
Paul Apprentice.
No, the Google executive, the security expert who was head of the security division of Google, was dating a celebrity, and I think that was also a driver in the story. Like, I don't think we would have known even who this guy was if he wasn't dating this.
Ex's boyfriend died in it. Wow.
Yeah.
Is trivial.
Okay. Yeah. That's what we were getting at.
Well,
anyway.
But that's who we are. I mean, that's the whole point. That is who we are. We're interested in those kinds of phenomena. No?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
There's a great book you should all read called The Myth of Solid Ground. It'll scare the daylights
it's
out
about,
of you.
It's about earthquakes.
Yes.
Yeah. Tsunami.
But this is, Kathmandu and Nepal are right over a major fault. If you live there, you are going to be in an earthquake.
Sure.
And so Donatella, for example, she and her family have these go kits planted all over the place and outside, not in the house because the house will collapse, but planted all over. You have a tent and you have water and you learn to live with the expectation that this could happen to you.
So in that case, they have no choice. They have to live over a fault. That's where the population is. They do it.
Or emigrate.
Yeah,
that's
the choice. Exactly. But what about San Francisco? What about all those places where we also know there are plates to what do they call them?
Plates.
No, but what are they? What's the adjective?
Tectonic,
yeah. Plates that are there. I've often wondered why anybody would take that risk, but they do.
Well, there's a lot can be done in places that have resources, such as San Francisco, which is you build in a way that resists. Or,
and Tokyo does the same thing.
Sure.
Wasn't there a World Series out there once when
1989 or
90, like that, when the
Oakland,
let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue to talk. By the way, I just want to mention the executive of Google who was killed. His name was Dan Fredenberg. But
who is his girlfriend?
His ex-girlfriend was Sophia Bush.
God, I have to look that up.
Okay.
Daughter of the president?
No.
She's a news
correspondent.
She's
on CW and WB. Anyway, we'll be back after this short break. Good morning, and as you just heard from Ray, everything's good.
Except for all of that that isn't.
There's no, just, internally
the
things are good.
The state of everything's good.
I apologize. Alan and I were having a conversation.
We're
about
having a technical,
office matters.
We're having a technical conversation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll leave.
Okay.
Don't you dare.
Okay.
We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. You want to get a few in before the break?
Anything you say. Rich says, from Rich, earthquakes are still an event which encompasses us. The power and fury, as a nation, we are still too caught up in celebrities. We don't vote as we should, thus we are paying for it now. Big money buys an election, but not protection from an earthquake. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was an encompassing letter.
Okay. My many-year devotion to the roundtable, says Gideon, has reached a straining point, and I am seriously considering giving it up. My disappointment is the, quote, new music, which I find horrendous, and the increased time spent reading emails, when I'd just rather continue listening to you, to your talk and argument. That's from Gideon. Well, we don't agree, but thanks for writing. Irene says, you take your chances if you choose to live near a fault. America is allowed to build in precarious places, and the most dangerous places where we build are most expensive.
It's true. It's along the ocean front, too, in the
right.
wave of, in the path of
Well, that's true. That's
tornadoes.
True. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
That's true.
Let's see. We did that. James says, panel, I read the Telegraph story this morning, and it was about a woman from UK, of course, who survived the Everest avalanche. It is only expected that each country will cover their own local connection to the earthquake along with the larger picture. Sometimes the tragedy of a few make it easier for us to eventually absorb the enormity of this catastrophe. So sad, says Jim
yes.
from Montgomery.
Okay. Principle of proximity.
Right.
Yep.
What'd you say? Did I do something wrong?
No.
No. Okay. I don't know. Okay. No, this is all different. This is all, you know, stuff from candidates.
Oh,
write you,
yeah.
You know, I hear
trying
regularly,
to get your vote.
I hear regularly from Hillary, Rand Paul. You know, they're all my friends, and they write to me almost every day. And the last thing it says, donate now.
Nah.
Okay, so we're not going to read those.
No.
So we're good on
no.
that. All right. So we move on to another story that we can do in a few minutes before our news break, and that is the Russian hackers.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about this story.
So it's actually an old story. We just have an update making it accurate.
Absolutely. So according to what we have learned on Friday, I believe, is that some of President Obama's email correspondence was swept up by Russian hackers last year in a breach of the White House unclassified computer system that was far more intrusive and worrisome than had been publicly acknowledged, according to senior American officials briefed on the investigation.
Yeah, Ray and I were talking before the show about this, and we've decided it's time to go back to paper and pen. Get this stuff off online. There appears to be no way to really protect it.
Yeah.
Leaks have happened because of this now. Hacking, bad stuff.
So what do you do?
Paper,
pen. But you still have to get it there.
Put the post office back in business.
Yeah. This is either you have to severely limit what you're putting online, that there's no foolproof method. This is the FBI and the CIA who's protecting these conduits, and they have been hacked. This is not good news.
I know we talked about this when the story first broke, but in my silly little Joe mind, it just seems like if there's one person on the planet who would have a secure email system, it's the president.
It'd be
the president of the United States.
You would think so.
Okay, here's another thing. Why did they lie to us? Why are we only hearing now, months later, that it was as bad as it was? I hate that, too.
I think there are reasons to do that.
What? What were they?
Intelligence reasons. In other words, you don't want the other guy to know that you know how bad it is. More interesting than
And also, like, what have they read?
The Russians are going, oh, we fooled them. They don't know we have their stuff.
No, that's part of it. That's part of spycraft.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I heard a piece of this being discussed in the BBC last night, and they were saying that one of the concerns was they didn't know how much the American government did not know how much the Russians actually knew they had. It's a whole information grab. And if you then say, oh, you have this, then they may have not known that they actually did have it.
Ah.
Does that make sense?
Sort of, except now the New York Times has it, so everybody knows.
Well, then the officials then went out and sort of acknowledged, and I assume that they were aware of then what happened.
But then another level to this is the political level, and this is quoting from the New York Times. One of the curiosities of the White House and State Department attacks is that the administration, which recently has been looking to name and punish state and non-state hackers in an effort to deter attacks, has refused to reveal its conclusions about who is responsible, even though smart money is on the Russians. And they will not say that. They said, quote, it's not in our best interests.
Well, and I wonder why it isn't in our best interests. Could it be that maybe we're doing unto them what they've done unto us all along and have been?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. But we do that to North Korea, too, presumably. And we were quick to point the finger at them with the Sony thing.
Sure. So why is it not in our interest?
I don't know, man. Well, you're the political scientist. You tell me.
Well, no, I'll tell you this much. Of the people in the room, you just may be the very smartest of all of us.
Well, I think that's clear, but still.
So therefore, I would think...
I need to go get a coffee.
So I would think... I've been drinking too much coffee, and I need to go. So the question I have for you, Ray, is why don't you, if you're so smart, why don't you tell us?
I don't know the answer to that question. Why we wouldn't say it's the Russians unless... Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure.
And as I said, I'm just going to bring up a whole bunch of different things today. We have a minute and a half, but we've been talking a lot on this show about the Secret Service, but for a year, the former president of the United States, George H.W. Bush, has said that the security system in his home didn't work and the Secret Service did not fix it. How does that happen?
The same way you get people jumping over the fence and running into the White House and drones landing on the White House, the secret security is broken.
You mean his physical security or the electronic security?
The electronic security within his
house
compound was broken.
Okay, but I mean, is this his email security or to keep people out of his house?
Yes, it was the security to keep the security system to keep people out of his house.
I don't know.
Like, you think once you report that, maybe that would be done by the end of the day.
Right.
And this, again, back to my point of...
What's going on with that Secret Service?
Like, you think of the one person that their security system would work, would be a former president. We don't have that many of them.
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, he's in Texas, and presumably he's packing heat. So I think he'll be okay.
No, I don't know. I don't feel good about it. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this. The acting chief of the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation acknowledged in a new statement that the global philanthropy launched 15 years ago by the former president has made missteps but defended the organization's charitable work and its commitment to transparency. The new statement, posted Sunday to the organization's blog, comes in response to a flood of scrutiny to the charity and its donors that has coincided with Hillary Rodham Clinton's entry into the presidential campaign. The attention has led Republicans to charge that Clinton is too cozy with donors who have given millions to her family's foundation, helping to burnish her reputation in the process. It has also threatened the reputation of the charity, which runs health and poverty reduction programs around the world. We touched on this on Friday when we were at the CIA. By the way, thanks to all the CIA folks.
That was a great show.
Great.
Very, very fun. Very nice. Okay.
CIA folks, it sounds like you're all in intelligence.
Yeah. No.
Culinary Institute. Of America.
Yes.
So what do you make of this?
Well, you would think that if Hillary Clinton knew she was going to run for president, and I think we have to presume that she knew it from the very beginning, from the time that Bill left the White House.
I.e. 15 years ago when this foundation was set up.
Yeah. That you just don't cross that line. Now, let's be fair. Andrew Cuomo raises, 34 million dollars for run for governor, and he gets money from various places. They're all, as my mom would have said, they're all doing it now. But you really have to wonder about it. I know I have a very, very close personal relationship with somebody who said that she was really thinking of not voting for Hillary. And this is somebody who really has adored the Clintons from the very beginning. So this could really mean trouble.
I bent over backwards to try to find a way around this, that Hillary was just being attacked unfairly. You know, the source of this came from a conservative writer. She has problems with the press. She just didn't explain herself, that she should be separate from Bill. But I think this is horrendous. I think it's dishonest. She violated an agreement. I believe she violated an agreement with Obama. She stuck to the letter of the agreement rather than the spirit, which is let me know. She has been silent about it now. It looks bad. It feels bad. It's just wrong. And I want to know why our uranium deposits are now under the control of Russians. I want them back.
Yeah.
I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
So the one that I highlighted here in the Washington Post article that Joe referenced is the sticking point of this whole matter. So in 2009, she became Secretary of State.
Right.
And she said, no more our foundation, you know, I'm going to step down from the foundation and no more foreign money coming in.
I don't think she ever said that. She always, the money was always came in, but she agreed that she would report to the Obama administration what that money was.
Okay, and so this is the quote. At the same time, the foundation confirmed last week that it is likely to resubmit several years of tax filings to the IRS after discovering that they incorrectly reported that the organization received no support from foreign governments in those years. They stressed that the overall revenue numbers are correct. They just forgot the part about the foreign governments.
Tax fraud. It's real questions of judgment in this.
Let's talk for a second, Rosemary, because we were talking about this during the break, but we were talking about this story about a week and a half ago when the New York Times made mention of it in reference to a new book that is being put out. And we questioned as to what the arrangement was because they said in that article that the New York Times would have access. Mm-hmm. New York Times and the Washington Post, right? Would both have access to the information. And I guess that was done, that agreement was done because they felt that it was solid information. And here, you want to take a look at it? You go take a look at it.
Yeah. We theorize here that perhaps this was a way to assuage conservative readers. Now looking at the story, and I read it intently, and it's been fully reported by the Times, and it's backed by documents. And indeed, now we have them confessing that, oh, yeah, there were mistakes made. So I do believe that's why the press went ahead and said, we need to see what you have. And good that they did. I have to applaud that. We need to know this. This is a major story.
Do botched tax filings derail a presidential run, though, in the end?
We don't like our presidential candidates to get out of taxes. But to me, it's the national security issue here. They were taking money, $500,000 for a speech that Bill Clinton collected.
But he's not running.
Take it. If you're a politician, you accept that it's you who loses privacy and rights and your immediate family. And Bill Clinton is a former president. He should know better. Both of them should have known better. They just thought they could get away with it.
Well, she said it.
There's a certain arrogance here.
She told you why she did it. She told you that she
was. What did she say?
She said, we were broke. Don't you remember?
Not anymore.
Well, she didn't. I'll tell you one thing. She didn't get a lot of approval for that one.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that was when the book came out, and she said that that there was the money issues.
I mean, are we making clear though that this deal was the foundation got money?
Yeah.
Foundation does very nice work.
Yeah,
it got money, but in return, the money came from companies that were taking over control of U.S. owned uranium deposits.
Correct.
We're talking nuclear weaponry here.
It's a huge
thing.
Materials that go into it.
Well.
Okay. All right. That's a small point.
Well, just to be fair about this, the way that this society, our politics works, are that you say, okay, let's see now. Let's put $100 million down. It's a bet. Yeah, let's put $100 million down on Hillary. Or $50 million down on Hillary, or $5 million down on Hillary, because when she becomes the president, we're going to hope that our $5 million gets us $500 million.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court has said that's freedom of expression.
That's
good
correct.
For you. Horrible.
That's the way the system works now. It's disgusting.
Well, the other thing that disturbs me is that Hillary's response to this was the same thing as in Benghazi. It's like, I was Secretary of State. I didn't handle these piddling small matters.
Well,
what was she dealing with?
And the email, too.
Yeah,
all of this. I'm sorry, Joe, because I don't agree with Rosemary on this one.
No, and the she used the same response in the email too, meaning that I wasn't aware of what.
Yeah, lesser people in my department handled this.
Well, yeah, well, okay, fair enough. But on the other question, Rosemary, I really do, think that they were after her on the Benghazi thing, and I think most Americans agree with me. They just thought that the Republican attempt to build a fire on that one just was
beyond
the pale.
I think Hillary actually, I do think she mishandled Benghazi. What she did really well was handle the congressional Republicans who questioned her about Benghazi, so that became the issue. But the truth is, why wasn't that embassy in Libya, the most dangerous place in the world, on an anniversary date that has significance to terrorists, why was it not better
protected? Well, no, they blew it all right, but I don't know that you can ascribe that to her doing this. Look, she's at the top. You're fair enough saying she could have been paying more attention to anything that went wrong. Something goes wrong at WAMC, we know who's going to get blamed.
Yeah,
me.
It's your fault.
That's right. So the truth is here that it is I think reaching.
Okay, then my question, Alan, would be, okay, you were too busy and too high up to deal with security at an embassy in the most dangerous spot in the world on 9/11. You were too busy, too high up to deal with security of our uranium deposits. What exactly are you doing? What does the Secretary of State do?
It's a huge job.
What was she doing instead of those two things?
John Kerry are around the world and negotiating on all the major things. That's all going on right now. She's not saying, okay, do we need two more people in Benghazi to protect the ambassador there? I just think it was overreaching.
So the question, there are many, but I guess the political question here is, which is what everyone has been asking over the weekend, is does this stick? And how much of a you indicated your anecdote, Alan, a moment ago, of people who have been loyal to the Clintons and to Hillary Clinton for a long time, having giving pause now. So, does this open up the field to another attractive Democratic candidate to, while we still have some time?
Is there one?
That's right. Who?
Well, that's it.
Like who? Martin O'Malley from...
No,
from
Joe Pitch. Biden.
Joe Biden is a possibility, but if you think they're not going to go after... Look, why are the Republicans going after Hillary Clinton, hammer and tongue? Because they know in their minds she's going to be the candidate, and she's way, way ahead in many of the polls. As a result of that, the whole idea is to dirty Hillary Clinton. Come up with anything you want. Use all the Goebbels propaganda stuff.
Well, this is not propaganda.
I'm not quite through yet. Repeat it over and over and over again. Now you go. Go ahead.
That's not propaganda. This is factual stuff.
Yeah.
That's why they're doing it? No, they're doing it because they want to put a stop to Hillary Clinton's potential presidency.
It doesn't matter why they want to do it. This makes me think maybe she should be stopped, and I want a woman president.
Well, there you go again. Once again, telling us how you want Hillary, how you like Hillary, and all of the reasons
about
stopping
her. I'm very disappointed in this. I think this is a big problem.
Okay. Who am I?
But the question is, we're very early in the season. So does that allow somebody else in?
And if you're a candidate, maybe even anyone who has been
sniffing at the heels, if you will, under the assumption that Hillary Clinton would move forward.
Like who? Andrew?
Well, it's one name on the list. There are others.
Oh, please! All of the polls that have been taken in the case of Cuomo don't even show him as the name of the new book, The Contender. They don't show him as a contender. I don't think that. And also, his affiliation with the Clintons would make it very improbable he would do that. I just don't see Biden would be the only name that comes to mind. And I think that, frankly, given the choice between Hillary and Biden, the naysayers on the propagandistic, we don't want Hillary side, would be delighted to take Biden.
How about somebody further to the left, Bernie Sanders? Or
Oh, please.
No?
Well, I love Bernie. You know that. I think he's a great political hero. It's just that, and I think people, it would be great if he runs in a primary. He'll get a lot of Democratic votes. But I don't think he can capture the middle in an election for president.
Anybody else? Okay. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll go through a whole bunch of issues here in the last few moments of the program. What?
Over already?
Yeah. We have 15 minutes left.
Ooh.
All right. So we'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. We thank you very much for being with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a few letters to get to, and then we'll move on to a quick succession of topics.
Okay. So from a happy listener, it's been said that Congress greatly decreased the budget for protection of foreign posts, so they should not take some of the blame as well. And it is not, in capital letters, all Hillary Rodham Clinton's fault. I agree with Alan. It is a witch hunt to bring her down because she's the front runner, and the conservative machine, the Koch brothers, don't want her in the White House. And that's from a happy listener. And Jeannie says, the email scandal is a double standard. The Bush administration deleted 20 million White House emails and the Congress said nothing. Benghazi is a result of the Republicans cutting budgets. Money from everywhere is how Congress and the Supreme Court set up the game. George wants us to know that there never has been a U.S. embassy in Benghazi, Libya. It is a diplomatic outpost with a CIA listening post. Also, funding for diplomatic security was cut for the three preceding years by the Republicans in Congress. Yet no one ever seems to talk about it except for the three letters.
Wait.
Except for the three
letters. The embassy is in Tunis. It also was attacked and cars were burned and had to be emptied after that. The consulate was indeed a CIA post. And funding was not cut to Libya or to Tunisia. It was cut overall. So it's up to this Department of State to say how we're going to spend money.
Well, yeah.
They might, for example, have taken security away from, oh, say, Britain and France and put it into Africa where you really needed it.
I see. Okay, thank you
and
for that.
Were the Republicans in control of Congress?
No, it was. They helped to pass it. I don't think it's Republican.
Okay, so let's even out the blame.
Yeah,
people.
The law was passed, so therefore it is the law of the land.
And Kevin says, how do we spell Clinton? Question mark, arrogant.
Right.
Did I have read that?
I think we did that one.
In the break.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
right,
yeah,
I
yeah.
forgot.
Julius, our old friend, says, Rosemary, Benghazi was the most dangerous spot in the world on 9/11? Two question marks. Please keep the hyperbole in control.
Oh, come on. Foreign American representatives
in
Northern Africa.
I think he means the actual 9/11.
2001.
2001.
But that's not what Rosemary
and
meant.
You, Rosemary, you were saying that on the anniversary,
on the anniversary of
9/11.
Of it,
and
yeah.
I think that's where the disconnect
comes
in.
I'm sorry. Okay, where it's a traditional
day
to attack.
Okay.
And Bill says, although there are security concerns re-foreign companies taking over American uranium deposits, I think the big issue here is the Clintons' enthusiastic alliances with corporate interests, which is what Bill beloved and disastrous NAFTA was all about. And it says, P.S., the Repubs were full of obsessing about Benghazi, especially after they made big cuts in State Department security budget. That's the point, I think, here. And then Robert wants us to know that Russ Feingold is his candidate for president. He exited the Senate too early. He's been out of the limelight. I think he could get broad support. Uh-huh. And Joan goes along with that, says, we need people with integrity, Feinstein, Kucinich, Duval Patrick, Joaquin Castro, Warren, etc. I agree with Alan. Going after Hillary is like that was wrong, but I'm not a Hillary fan, and so that's what we got.
Is Gus Hall running again?
Gus Hall.
That was
a shot, wasn't it? Because Gus Hall, for those people who were too young, was a perpetual communist candidate.
He ran a lot, yeah.
And so what are you saying here, Ray?
Nothing,
saying
sir.
We're a bunch
Eugene
communist?
Debs.
Nothing.
There's another one
there
like that.
There you go.
Yeah. History
Norman
lessons.
Norman Thomas.
There you go.
All right, so we have 10 minutes. I'll try to get three topics in 10 minutes. First of all, there were thousands of people are expected today at the funeral for Freddie Gray, the 25-year-old black man who died after sustaining serious spinal injuries while in the custody of the Baltimore police. Intense protests over the weekend, demonstrations, as well as some outbreaks of violence and concerns. And obviously, this is a story that is going to be going on for quite a bit, much like Ferguson was, I would think.
You know, this is a bad one because this really was a terrible thing that happened to this guy. We don't know, but I can tell you one thing. If police had the compulsory cameras on, or compulsory cameras on, we might know more. And but David Gustin and I were talking on the early news this morning about the idea that sooner or later, anything that's on a piece of tape will get to YouTube. So it may well be that that's the other side on why you don't want to do that. On the other hand, we've had some very remarkable success on forbidding doctors to talk about their patients, with understanding that the consequences should be so great in, under the HIPAA laws that they might lose their licenses. I think you could do some of that if you had body cameras, but it's going to be an interesting debate.
The police commissioner in Baltimore came out and said regulations were violated, both the way they didn't treat him at the scene, they didn't bring him to health care in time when he was asking for it. And the response of the rank and file was to be unhappy with the commissioner for saying that. I'm sorry, once again, and I will repeat my rant here, that these are horrible offenses. Something has to be done in police departments. It's systematically a problem, and we are not hearing from good cops saying, yeah, we want something done about this also.
The reason that you're probably not hearing is that, and I've often said that, you know, being a policeman is probably the hardest job we've got, is that there but for the grace of God could go I. In other words, you know, somebody does something. You bring a guy down. You use a taser. You put somebody into some kind of an arm lock, and you subdue them, and somebody does that, and everybody says, "Okay, bring that to a grand jury." And there's every other cop sitting there saying, "That could have been me." I mean, it's that simple.
I don't know. It's really hard to defend when you're not even obeying the regulations set up by other cops for each other. No chokeholds. Get people who say I'm hurt to medical attention in less than the 30 minutes it took here. It's not like we're asking for outrageous treatment by cops. Mm-hmm. We're asking them to just obey their own rules. I'm very sympathetic to the anger and the frustration in Ferguson and now in Baltimore.
By the way, me too. And I think something happened, but there could have been a lot of different things that happened other than it took some half an hour to get him there. It could have been the moment he's in that truck, that car, he's done. You know, it could have been not 30 minutes from then. They could have known that they really had a problem on their hands. And I agree with you, because we do know that when it's people of color, the numbers are much higher than people who are Caucasian. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to switch subjects because I'm trying to get to two more topics here. NBC News expanded its internal investigation into Brian Williams for instances in which he is thought to have misrepresented his accounts, according to news reports. There have been several stories, one in the Washington Post, that I found to be fascinating because it basically outlines the meetings that they've been having in which senior NBC reporters at the White House, at the Pentagon, no names given, but we can just assume who they are, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Came in and said, "Look, we're now the laughingstock. We can't go in now without getting the information that we used to get because everybody says, okay, well, look, we have 15 examples of where he made up stuff." So now they're looking at two other cases. Is that right? Is it two?
Yes.
Two other instances. That were apparently falsified.
Embroidered.
Yes.
They can't put him back there. I think their problem is contractual. It's the question now of what they owe him.
The media critic for Vanity Fair insists that he will go back because it's so difficult in this day and age to get a brand like Brian Williams. Everyone knows who he is. He may be. Do you know the anchors in the other stations? I have to really think about it, and it's my own business.
Well, I do.
But we're in the business.
Okay.
Outside, not so much. It's Brian Williams, who's the star. So to give that up is really difficult. But
the brand is tarnished, though?
Yeah, the brand is tarnished now, and the fact that they have so many cases. I mean, he's getting to look like O'Reilly. course, that's a brand where they kind of like being dramatic and exaggerating, right?
Yes, right.
Right. And it is different. I mean, one is an entertainment program. The other one is a news program.
No. But I think Rosemary makes a fair and germane point here, which is that some people try to do it right and they run from their own shadows, where the O'Reilly people and the Fox people say, hey, you know, we're sticking with our guys no matter what.
Yeah. And I don't think the public differentiates between the two. They don't see it as a one's entertainment, one's news, so we treat them different. I think they end up saying all news is tainted. I think that's what they think.
Oh. And you think O'Reilly is entertainment?
Well, he's not a news anchor.
Well, what is he?
He's akin to what Al Sharpton is on the other network.
Yeah, but he's always talking about the news.
Well, it would be he is... Rachel Maddow or you know, any of the people
they
who
get
have
perspective on the news.
It's his show. It's not the Brian Williams show. It's the NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
No, I'm not talking about Brian Williams now.
You're talking about O'Reilly.
Well, that's what I mean, but that's the difference.
I think the public does not see any of these divides that we in the business are so careful to set up between mainstream media and tabloids, between talk shows with O'Reilly and a new show anchored by Brian Williams. We see them as clear and distinct. I don't think the public does.
I think you don't give the public enough credit.
So the former anchor of ABC News held an interview on Friday evening that brought in 17 million viewers. That interview with Bruce Jenner on his transitioning. And 17 million people.
An amazing interview, too. I'm going to be showing it to news classes for a really long time.
Why?
Because Diane Sawyer asked everything.
Everything.
In fact, I don't understand. Some people say, oh, she gave softballs to him. That's because he answered them so well. He was really prepped. Whoever prepped him should work with presidents during debates because he was sincere and open and completely honest. Sometimes confusing because I think he's confused himself. But Sawyer asked him everything. She said,
I'm sorry for interrupting. Why did 17 million people watch?
Because that kind of authentic conversation is compelling.
And let's face it, this has been a media circus for a long time. He has not spoken to anyone, and they have, for a year, it has been whispered, and then suddenly he says, this is the interview that I'm going to talk about.
I'm a Kardashian student. I have looked at this phenomena, and whispered,
has
I mean.
Has that ever been said?
I'm a Kardashian student?
Yeah. No,
I am a Kardashian student.
It's a 401 course.
This is a phenomena.
We only have a few seconds, but go ahead.
And it hasn't been whispered. It's been on the covers of all kinds of magazines. They've shown pictures of his transitioning. And yes, he hasn't spoken about it, but it's not a media circus. It's the idea of transgender.
It's not a media circus?
Transgender has suddenly become hot. People are interested in it, and for the first time, they're talking about it. So that's why the interest is there, I think.
We're done.
Okay. We're out of time.
Oh, I got the last word. That never happens.
We'll give you the last word. We welcome you to write roundtable WAMC.org. We'll be back tomorrow for another discussion. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.